The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network show and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and this show was pre-recorded on March 3rd, 2017, and that's because I plan to attend the Prospector and Developer Conference in Toronto next Tuesday. So instead of the usual live show, today I'm going to be playing three very important interviews that I think should help you see why the equity market's recent bullish move is way out of touch with reality and that there is likely to be a huge day of reckoning that in fact may be just now getting underway. I do want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to encourage you to continue sending along your questions, comments, criticisms, and praises to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Would like to also thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for today's show are DynaCert Inc., Golden Predator, Chilean Metals, Arvista Gold Corp., Novo Resources, Uranium Energy Corp., and Aran Resources. Well, the gold price has been taking a bit of a hit lately, and that has impacted the prices of our junior mining shares fairly dramatically over the last couple of days. However, unless you buy the mainstream propaganda about the economy and that it is basically all right, in my view, you still have to remain very bullish on gold and gold shares. However, this decline is definitely a gut check. As this is being recorded on March 3rd, I will just tell you that Michael Oliver's views at the start of today is that gold should hold in the 1210 to 1220 range. However, that floor increases, according to Michael's work, by $10 per week, and that's on his intermediate chart work. By the time this airs on March 7th, we should have a better idea as to whether or not something more onerous is underway or whether Michael is right, and we will see gold holding at the 1210 to 1220 level. One of my guests today was supposed to be Janet Lee Sheriff of Golden Predator. That's a sponsor and one of my favorite junior gold mining shares, one that I own personally. This is a company that is in the process of outlining a major gold deposit in the Yukon. Unfortunately, management could not come on the show today because they are doing a financing, and legally they are not allowed to talk about the company until after the funding is completed. I expect we will have a guest from Golden Predator on our show in the near future after the quiet period is over to get an update on this very exciting story. Well, I've titled today's show, Preparing and Profiting from Trump's Doomed Economics. I will be playing three interviews, as I noted, on today's show that I think will help you see what kind of desperate condition the U.S. economy is in, and that not only is there nothing that Trump can do to turn things around, but that most of the economic policies he is espousing may well be very well intended, but are likely to make things worse, not better. After our first commercial break, David Stockman will explain why $20 trillion of national debt is in fact making Trump's job of restoring America to greatness mathematically as well as politically impossible, unfortunately. Your host subscribes to the Austrian School of Economics, as does David Stockman and financial journalists like John Tamney, who will talk momentarily about why Trump's policies on trade and monetary issues are ill-advised. While there is no doubt in my mind that Austrian economics is the economic school of thought that most closely identifies the world as it actually is, those of us in the Austrian school have often been way too bearish about the markets for way too long, and that has been extremely costly to me personally, I must confess, as well as many other Austrian thinkers that I know. We often miss out on the boom times because we are waiting for the doom times. And so the last interview today will be Ronald Stofferle, an Austrian economist who has written a book titled Austrian School for Investors. In the interview conducted by Jeff Deist of the Mises Institute, Ronald will explain that Austrians do have an advantage over mainstream folks with regard to the very big picture. But he will give us some advice as to how we Austrians don't have to miss out on making money during the boom times as we wait for the inevitable doom caused by government interference in the markets. So to summarize regarding today's show, after the first commercial break, David Stockman will talk about why, unfortunately, Trump's economic plan is destined to fail and why we are facing a huge economic and market crisis in the very near future. And during the last segment of today's show, Ronald Stofferle will explain why Austrian economics can be very helpful in identifying the impending crisis, but also allowing us to profit when the good times are with us. But before we go to the first break, I am going to play another interview conducted by Jeff Deist with the rarest of investment professionals, namely an Austrian school financial journalist named John Tamney. John will explain why most of Trump's policies have to do with trade and monetary policies are ill-advised and will likely hurt more than help an already very sick economy. I believe what John has to say is very important, so please take a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Mises Weekend Show. I'm your host, Jeff Deist. We're very happy and pleased to be joined this morning, Inauguration Day Friday, I might add, by John Tamney, a name I'm sure many of you know. But if you don't know, you really ought to be reading and following him. John is the editor of Real Clear Markets. He also writes quite a bit on political economy for Forbes magazine. He is a senior fellow at Reason. And he also wrote a book a couple of years that Regnery put out that we carry in our own bookstore called Popular Economics, What the Rolling Stones, Downton Abbey, and LeBron James Can Teach You About Economics. And I think it was an attempt to bring home some of these theoretical concepts to real-world action. And with that, we welcome John Tamney. How are you doing today, John?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on, Jeff.
Well, it is Inauguration Day. I've seen you have written a fair bit about both Trump and some of his cabinet picks. Give us your overarching thoughts. What do you think of Trump, pro and con?
What I like about Trump is probably what many do. He is not like other politicians. I like that he kind of says what's on his mind. At the same time, I'm terrified by him. Trade is the purpose of our work. To import is the reason that we get up and go to work every day. Trump wants to limit our ability. He's bought into this falsehood that's confused thinkers for years that somehow imports are what hurt us, when in fact imports are the reward for all of our work. It also terrifies me that he thinks you can devalue your way to prosperity. Devaluation is the biggest enemy prosperity has ever known, simply because it's the biggest enemy of investment. And so I like the change. I don't like politicians in general, but it terrifies me. He could really be bad if he gives into his worst instincts.
Do you think there's a difference fundamentally between his vision or view of global trade and markets and what Hillary's might have been?
Yes, I legitimately do. Now, I base this on the fact that her husband was a free trader, and I feel like she ultimately would have been guided by some of his logic. I think Hillary moved against free trade simply because she thought it was politically expedient. I think in Trump's case, when you look at his commentary, and you look at his commentary going back to the 80s, we're talking about someone still living in the 1980s who back then felt that Japan was the biggest threat to the United States and thinks China is today, I would make the argument that if Japan and China didn't exist, we'd have to invent them. So good have both those countries been for U.S. economic growth. So it concerns me. I think Hillary would have been more moderate had she been elected. That's not me giving a preference to her, but I think on trade she would have been better.
Well, there's also the areas of nationalism and, of course, war and peace. And as you well know, one knock on libertarians is that we're so focused on trade and economics and GDP, and, you know, we'd sell our grandmothers for a few more points of prosperity. Do you think Trump is less likely maybe to set the world on fire than Hillary would have been?
You know, that's an interesting point. He says interesting things about North Korea, as in that's China's problem. And I tend to agree with that. He tends to say that the rest of the world, particularly the rich world, needs to take on or foot the bill for more of its defense. I think that is ultimately a peaceful concept. I don't think the world is made more peaceful when the U.S. is its policeman. But you hit on something that's important to me that I'm preaching to the choir and saying it to you. Guys like us love economic growth and free trade simply because we think that is the cheapest and best foreign policy mankind ever conceived. And so when people criticize us for our love of open trade and open markets, they miss why we think it's so important, because we love peace more than anyone.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that they also don't see tariffs and trade sanctions as acts of war, and they don't see domestic aggression against citizens in the form of what I would argue aggression, in the form of regulations and taxes. They don't see that as acts of war amongst our friends on the left.
Yeah, I love how you put that. I think you're so right. And again, between what we know is that when individuals are trading with one another, war becomes very expensive. It becomes costly because they're not serving one another's needs. To bring in someone who's known for being of the left, Joseph P. Kennedy always said to his son John, war's bad for business. And it is. It staggers me that an economics profession, almost to a man and woman, would say that World War II ended the Great Depression, that war stimulates the economy. Mises put that so well in his book Liberalism, that in fact war is the ultimate depressive concept. But I love how you expand it to beyond the shooting point.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you recall a few years ago, the earthquakes in Japan caused Honda dealerships across the United States to be short on both automobiles and parts for about 6 months. So the idea that we're ever going to have another war with Japan is a non-starter. But, John, I'd love to turn to your article. It was in Real Clear Markets a couple of days called No, Mr. President-elect, the Dollar is Not Too Strong. And I got to tell you, I love this article because there's even a lot of good folks on the free market side. I might throw out Larry Kudlow, who talks a lot about King Dollar. Explain to us, you know, this enduring fetish for exports over imports. Why do so many of us believe this?
All I can think is that people still believe after all this time that when people are buying from you, you're prosperous. Well, okay, that's true, but really, why do we get up in the morning every day? Why do we work for dollars? We're working for all the things we don't have. Our goal from the day we start working to long after we retire is to import. That is the source of our prosperity, what we can command in return for our toil. Yet somehow economists have turned that on its head, and it doesn't surprise me. I think it's a ridiculous profession. Economists believe that imports actually hurt us and exports are what strengthen us. What an odd thing.
Well, but you get in the article, you get into how devaluing the dollar simply devalues the power of average people's wages. Okay, let me ask you this. You talk about measuring in yardsticks and how these things don't really matter. Would you agree when Rothbard says we don't care about the money supply per se? Do you think that's correct?
Oh, absolutely. How arrogant for us to presume what the money supply should be. I think Mises put it brilliantly in The Theory of Money and Credit. He said, no, and I paraphrase lightly, no nation or individual need ever worry about having too little money. And his point was, if you're productive, if a country's productive or an individual's productive, money supply is always going to find that individual. Beverly Hills and Greenwich and Manhattan never have a money supply problem because there's lots of productive people in those places. And so you never worry about money. What you worry about is this measure, because that's all it is it stable? Because how awful if you're working for money, and per Mises once again, you're not working for money, you're working for what money can be exchanged for. How cruel if suddenly that ticket that you're working for is devalued, because that's the sole reason you're working to get what you don't have to import. If they're devaluing the currency, they're defeating the sole purpose of your work, because suddenly the dollars you exchange your toil for buy less.
Well, do you think that stability in and of itself is a goal? In other words, if a currency is volatile relative to other currencies or relative to the goods people want to buy, that means that workers have a harder time knowing what they're going to be able to afford, and it means business owners have a harder time knowing their, you know, budgeting their future costs. So is a rapidly or widely fluctuating currency, is that a bad thing in and of itself?
Of course it's a bad thing, because it deprives money of its sole purpose. Bringing Adam Smith into the conversation, the sole use of money is to circulate consumable goods. I would just add to it, the other sole use of money is to facilitate investment. What are investors buying when they commit capital to new ideas? They're buying dollar or currency income streams in the future. Well, so if the currency is volatile, or if it's constantly being devalued, you've reduced a great deal of incentive to commit resources to the future, or to delay your consumption of resources. So stability is essential. I'll point out here, my views are evolving. Historically, I've said the best way to do this, markets happened upon gold long ago, is a great way to measure the value of a currency. I'm still for a gold standard, given the choice between what we have now, a floating currency and gold. I think Mises got this right, too, in the theory of money and credit, that if governments didn't create money, obviously market actors would create money very quickly, because it facilitates trade among producers. I'm guessing JP Morgan, Walmart, and Visa would do a much better job of creating stable money that we'd all want to earn and exchange with than does the U.S. Treasury.
Well, if stability is good and wild fluctuations are bad, isn't slow erosion bad too? In other words, the Fed has an express policy of, you know, about 2% inflation targeting per year. Isn't that crazy too, if we think about it properly?
Oh, it's completely nutty, because I don't have to tell you that if your goal is 2% inflation, what you're going to do is double the price lever or devalue the dollar by name the percentage over 36 years. The only thing I would say about the Fed is the Fed doesn't view inflation in the way that you and I do. You and I view inflation as a devalue of the unit of account, in our case, the dollar, where it is devalued. The Fed views inflation as too much economic growth, which is really strange, because if you look throughout global economic history, economic growth is the biggest enemy of rising prices mankind has ever known. I cite the original mobile phone was $4,000. The original laser printer was $17,000. Early flat screen TVs cost $25,000 plus. Economic growth pushes down the prices of everything. The Fed thinks, in its infinite unwisdom, that economic growth drives up prices. It staggers me that people take those people seriously.
But even the financial journalism world does. You're an economic and financial journalist. Are you ever shocked at what you read about the Fed in mainstream financial publications?
Jeff, I'll one-up you on that. That is the reason I write about this stuff. I used to work on Wall Street. I'd watch CNBC and read the newspapers, and I'd read about how growth causes inflation and all these other nonsensical concepts. And I thought, I've got to get into this, because I grew up in the 1970s. I know what inflation is. And economists and journalists who claim to be experts on this, and the people who report on these experts, do not have a clue about what inflation is. So it made it. That's what got me into the field I'm in.
Well, We only have time for one more question, so I'll ask you this. Given the current reality and what most people probably believe about trade, about the Fed, about the dollar, et cetera, you know, what are some small things a Trump administration could do either in the Treasury Department or at the Fed itself? We know he's at least spoken to John Allison, the former Cato head, about a position, perhaps vice chair at the Fed. You know, what are some realistic things that Trump could do conceivably over the next 4 years that would make John Tamney happy?
Well, this is where people will disagree with me, but I think if you look at history, you don't need a central bank to devalue the currency. We were devaluing the dollar long before we had the Fed. I think the dollar is a treasury concept, which means it's a president concept. Presidents get the dollar they want. Reagan and Clinton largely wanted a strong dollar. They got it. Bush Jr., Carter, Nixon wanted a weak dollar. They got it. What Trump could do is just be quiet and tell his Treasury Secretary and those officials to be quiet, to stop complaining about China and the value of its currency. That quietude would signal to the markets that we believe in the importance of a strong dollar. That's the most I can hope for. In my perfect world, they legalize private money, because I do think, just as market forces bring us computers, socks, and shoes of all shapes and sizes, I think market actors would bring us much better, more stable money that we would much prefer to earn over what the U.S. Treasury issues. But that's an idealistic dream of mine.
Yeah, but I like the idea that you could legalize competing currencies right alongside the dollar. Let the Fed keep doing what it's doing. Let the Treasury keep doing what it's doing, but simply allow people to use other forms of payment, both in private business and to pay their taxes, without putting them in jail for it.
Absolutely. Imagine what that would do, that kind of competition. I would very happily earn a Walmart dollar or a Visa dollar. I think many others would too.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest is John Tamney from Real Clear Markets and also a great writer at Forbes. I really recommend you check him out. He is that rarest of rarities. He is a financial journalist who actually understands economics, and he brings to mind sort of a modern-day version of Henry Hazlitt in that sense, in that he writes in a very accessible way rather than an academic style. John, we're so happy that you joined us. We appreciate your time, and ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend.
So there you heard why Trump's policies on trade and money are likely to do more harm than good, though there is some merit, perhaps, to the foreign policies he espoused during his campaign. Don't go away, because after the break, David Stockman will tell us why no matter what Trump's economic policies might be, there is virtually no hope of a restoration of a strong U.S. economy, and that's because Trump is stuck with a $20 trillion debt that is enslaving our nation. It's not a happy story, but a necessary one if you want to understand the direction of our economy. So stick around after the break to hear David Stockman.
Orin Resources is a Canadian-based gold exploration company focused on the company's flagship Committee Bay project, located in northern Canada, one of the best mining jurisdictions in the world. The company's current resource, outlined by drilling thus far, stands at 1.1 million ounces of gold at over 8 grams per ton. Orin is operated by the same team that founded Asanko Gold, which is constructing a major gold mine in West Africa, and Caden Resources, which was recently purchased in November for over $200 million.
Golden Predator Mining Corp., a well-financed gold exploration company operating in Canada's Yukon. Focused on advancing its Three Aces project, a high-grade gold project located in the southeast Yukon with gold and quartz outcrops at surface. Ongoing work includes trenching, roadwork, drilling, and bulk sampling. Golden Predator also holds the past-producing Brewery Creek project located near Dawson City, Yukon. Golden Predator, a company working closely with Yukon First Nations. Golden Predator trades on the Canadian venture market as GPY, and in the U.S. OTC market as NTGSF.
Chilean Metals is a Canadian junior exploration company focusing on high-potential copper, gold prospects in Chile and Canada. Chilean Metals' Zulima property is a Candelaria-like prospect, one of the largest mines in the world. The company has begun its drill program in Chile on its Zulima property and should be completed by the end of February. We also own a 3% royalty on future production on Tech Resources' Copa Query property, potentially worth millions of dollars annually. This is the time to invest in Chilean Metals, a discovery story with a hedge. Traded TSX Venture under symbol CMX.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.